Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Match Slip Podcast. My name is Frank. I'm your host of the show. And on today's episode, we have LaDonna from Geeks and Games out in Oregon City, Oregon. If you haven't already listened to our previous episode with Dragonsword out in Greensboro, North Carolina, I recommend checking that out if you're interested. But for today, let's bring LaDonna onto the show. And I'm very happy to have her here today to talk about Geeks and Games. LaDonna, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
I'm happy to have you on today. So what can you tell us about your relationship with gaming as you got to the point of opening up a game store? Was it always a hobby of yours, gaming, and then it just kind of led into a business?
That's actually a great question. I have no experience with gaming. I grew up on a farm. I'm a farm girl. And we didn't have a lot of television or anything else, not a lot of technology for sure. I joined the military. My husband has always been a gamer. My husband and I got married in 2000, and he's always played Dungeons and Dragons, lots of Games Workshop type games. And then I joined the military, and while I was deployed, he said, hey, let's open a game store. And I said, no, I don't want to. And so he sent me a couple of games. And we would play one of the games we would play in between missions, and then another game we would play once a week when we'd have a day off occasionally. And so I got home in 2015, the day before Thanksgiving, and I kept telling him no, I wasn't ready. And so we continued to play games, and then we opened up our store in October of 2016. So there's been a lot of catch up for me when it comes to games, because I'm just not something that I'm used to. And yeah. It's definitely about hiring the right people so that they can teach me along the way as well.
And first of all, I want to say thank you for your service. What branch of the military were you in?
I was in the Air Force.
Okay. My dad was too. So I was just curious about that. So that's very cool. So how long during your involvement in the military was it before when you came back home and then you started doing the store with your husband?
Yeah, so I joined the military in 2009 and then went through a series of deployments. My last deployment was in 2015, and we opened our store in 2016. So I wasn't home for an entire year before we opened up the game store.
So this is the store's very first location. You haven't been anywhere else prior?
Correct. This is our first location.
And so I'm guessing your husband is the big gamer. That since he had pushed you to want to do this, what are some of the games that he enjoys playing that, you know, kind of gave him the bug to want to do this with you?
So he has always played, since he used to hide it from the nuns in Catholic school, he has always played Dungeons and Dragons. And he has played 40K, Flames of War, those types of games. Not a whole lot of board games. So when we opened up the store, he was a great resource for those individual ones. But because he neither one of us had ever played Magic, neither one of us had played a lot of board games. So it was really on me to be able to learn how to play the games, being able to connect with the community. And so the Games Workshop portion of it, where we have the miniatures and the painting, is mainly his area of expertise, although I've enjoyed learning how to paint models and have found that it's when I have the time, it's relaxing and something that I enjoy as well.
And so you were in the military before the game store. What was your husband doing prior to the game store?
That's actually one of the reasons why he wanted to open a game store. Shortly after I joined the military, he was in the Army. And shortly after getting back from or finishing basic training, we found out that the baby that we were hoping to adopt, it was going to happen sooner. So I got home 4 days before our son was born, and then I had to leave again on a deployment, and I came back home to a 10-month-old. So during that time, my husband was a single dad, essentially, with a brand new baby. He was also in nursing school at the time. And so his downtime was going to different game stores and finding that not all game stores are equipped to have like small children or families. That was his only outlet for entertainment, to say, but he really, that's kind of when it started to develop in his mind that he wanted to have a family environment and open up a game store that would welcome younger kiddos, families, babies as well. And so that's kind of what he did while I was deployed. And then he started, after he finished his nursing school and started working, then he started attending courses on small businesses, on how to start a small business.
I did see that on your website that you have families and kids that come. I thought that was great. What types of games do you find like the families will play together the most?
You know, it's really shifted over the years, and the pandemic has had a large part to play in that. So due to the pandemic, things have really changed. So I would say Dungeons and Dragons has been a huge changer when it comes to families. Families are wanting to spend more time together, reconnect over things that are not digital. And so we see a lot of families that come in and play Dungeons and Dragons. A lot of them, parents want to game with their children. We're also seeing recently, within probably the last 4 years, is our Pokemon community has just exploded. And we get so many parents that want to come and play Pokemon with their children. And so we do provide a certain day that we can teach people for free, both children and their parents, to be able to play Pokemon. And then from there, then they are hang out some of our different days where they can just kind of connect with their families and play. We have whole families that come in and play Pokemon together. And so I'd say those are probably, yes, we have board games and people connect over board games. But what was mostly surprising was that we had the Dungeons and Dragons as well as Pokemon.
I think it's really neat that Pokemon works at your store. You know, various stores I talk to, some people, you know, can host those types of events at their store. Others, it's become more of a collectible thing than actually playing a game. Was it from the very get-go when you introduced Pokemon as an event option that it took off right away? Or was it something that kind of had to be cultivated, especially with the families?
You know, it absolutely needed to be cultivated. We first started purchasing product and selling it, and it just didn't sell very well. It was very new to this, but then also very new to owning a store. And so I was hesitant about getting deeper into it and not being able to sell product and whatnot. That actually changed. We ended up having a day, and I really wanted my employees to be able to be professors, to be judges. I wanted them to be able to know how to play so that we could provide a place, because we've learned that learn to plays are really the way to get customers in. And we hired a person, and her name was Anna. And Anna was amazing. She knew that I wanted to develop Pokemon, and she sort of knew how to play, and she really just went above and beyond. And we used to have maybe 2 to 3 people a week coming into our store to play Pokemon. And she grew it to almost 40 kids and their parents coming in on Saturdays to play. On top of that, we adding another day because we just didn't have the room for it. We have typically upwards of like 16 to 20 people that come in on Fridays. And so she was the most amazing thing about our store, is because she saw our vision. She was a mom. She had 4 children. And she really saw what we wanted to do in our community. And so when children would come in, just the way that she treated them like they're coming into her living room. So she would remember everybody's names and little tidbits of information about them, and was just, she would see them in the community. She would connect with them. She would see them at school with her children. And it had nothing to do with the actual Pokemon, and it had everything to do with how we treated our customers. And so from that, we've just tried to continue to grow and grow and make Pokemon just that family-friendly event, letting the children feel important, and by remembering their names, remembering about them, and encouraging them. We have a lot of kiddos that are not the typical mainstream type of kiddos, and they feel safe and they feel comfortable in our store. And it's because of the environment that we foster and how we treat our customers when they come in.
And how many employees do you have helping to facilitate, you know, these turnouts?
Right now there's my husband and I, and then we have 3 other employees. Tragically, our manager was murdered in November.
Oh my goodness.
And so she really left a gaping hole in our community, because she not only managed our store, our Pokemon. She was mine and my husband's best friend. She also was a very accomplished pianist, and she did the accompany work for the choirs, for the schools, for any local little concerts. She was just so very talented. And so it's been awful actually. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's been horrible having her gone.
Oh, of course.
But the most important thing that we can remember is that, you know, those children loved her and our community loved her. And so we continue to act the way that she acted and love the way that she loved. And so that's how we continue to grow the Pokemon. And right now, Pokemon is one of our top sellers. It wasn't before Anna became involved and became our manager, but it certainly is now. And it continues to just blow the other lines just completely out of the water. So we have some big footsteps to follow, to try to fill and to keep that moving forward. During the time that she was here, she developed these wonderful relationships with the parents. And so as it stands now, we have parents that are organizers, that are judges, and they help me run all of our events. So it's not, she had it set up so that it was starting to run itself. So we didn't have to be quite as involved and hands on it. So I'm very grateful that she had those things set in place for what it is now.
I'm so terribly sorry for your loss. That's so tragic just to hear that. So she was the one who came up with the concept of the Learn to Play?
We had talked about it together, and I had mentioned, and this is what was so wonderful about her. I said, you know, it would be really great if we could just do like a Learn to Plays. We could offer it for free. We could have kiddos get involved. And she, when I said that would be great, she took that as, oh, it's got to get done. And so she went home and she like studied and texted me later and said, okay, so I've got the information sent off to be to be a judge. And I was like, wait, what? I'm like, you've been here 2 weeks. So that was what was amazing about her, is that she was so incredibly organized and was able to see just immediately what our vision was. And so people oftentimes, yes, they came in to play Pokemon, but really they came in to hang out with Anna, because she had the way just to make you feel so good about yourself. And so we would have parents and kids come in, and she was the one. She would occasionally try to hand it off to other people, and it just wasn't the same. It was her. So yeah, we kind of had come up together and said that first we're going to do a Learn to Play, and then we had to switch things up. Okay, we're going to do a Learn to Play from like 10 a.m. to 11, so that we have casual play beginning at 11, so we have like a strong cutoff time. And typically every week we get anywhere between 2 to 7 people that come to learn how to play Pokemon for the first time.
And do you notice a lot of those people that come to the Learn to Plays, that they wind up coming back for the actual events once they feel comfortable with the game?
They do. And because we are an organized play store with Pokemon, so we get their prize packs that they ship out to us. What was great is we get these items for free, and I just don't feel morally right making a profit off of these free booster packs that they give us. So Anne and I had talked about like, what can we do to really reward those children that come and stick it out, you know, and some are on all the many different levels on how they can, handle lots of interactions with people. And so we decided that, you know, for every game that they play, they're going to get a stamp. For everything that they do, the new deck that they build, if they bring a friend, if they welcome in a new customer and play like a first game, that we have these promo packs that we can give out to them. And so through that, they are acting like Anna. So they see a kid walk in, and we have explained, you know, you remember when you first walked in, you're kind of scared, a little uncomfortable. And so the kids are so very eager to greet our newer soon to be players. And they also know that they're going to get rewarded for having that that way that we present ourselves. So if we, the expectations are that we are kind to people, that we make people feel welcome, we ask them their name, that we have a almost like a checklist to go through, like, hi, my name is so-and-so. I'm a very new player. And, you know, I'm hoping that you will help me out if I need help. And so, or I'm feeling really nervous today. I'm not sure how to play this. You know, would you mind helping me? And so having them be able to say those things knows that makes them feel that when a new student or a new Pokemon player comes in, that they might be feeling those things. So they can ask them, oh, I'm sorry, are you feeling nervous? Don't be nervous. It's so much fun here. So we're just trying to cultivate that environment where kids feel welcome coming in and that other kids are eager to play. Yes, there is ultimately competitions, but that really we want that to kind of remove that stigma a little bit at first so that they can feel comfortable and wanting to come back.
And it's almost serving too as like a byproduct in terms of like a marketing effort to get, you know, more people into the store, whether they're new or not. You know, they're following through from the legacy of Anna, you know, to teach people and to bring people into the store. So it kind of has this rippling effect, it seems like, for you guys, that you're able to attract new people in a very unique way.
Absolutely.
So what would you describe the gaming scene like in Oregon? Now, I'm on the East Coast, so I'm not sure exactly on the opposite side of the country what the gaming scene is like there.
Well, I mean, at least for us, there are quite a few different stores in the Portland metro area, and we are the only store in this county. So, well, I take that back. There is another store. We are the only like family board game store in the county. So our competition is more like friendly competition. So we try to have good relationships with some of the other stores. So as far as like what we kind of do in the area, honestly, at least in the Portland metro area, there's a lot of Magic the Gathering, as I'm sure there is everywhere. And a lot of like 40K, I would say. So
what would you consider to be, outside of, you know, just the, you know, the kid gaming, what would you say as an overall for the store are the most popular games that people are coming into play?
Honestly, recently, I mean, there's Lorcana has been quite popular. For us, we have found one of Anna's, it was like her baby as well, was Universes. Used to be My Hero Academia, but now is Universes. That's the reason that she got into that was because it was an anime show that her children, that she approved for her children to watch. And so she originally got into it for her four children. And then since then, she has really grown. And right now, I believe we are the only store that's doing local qualifiers in Oregon. And so for us, that's a little bit of something that's kind of different because a lot of the other stores were just not able to support the player base for it. So that's been something we have quite a bit of. The other thing that we do here, and I've seen some of the other stores kind of do them as well, is because we're really a community-based store, we really do a lot for our community. We do spring break, summer, and winter break camps, Dungeons and Dragons camps for kids. So typically we have, we employ younger kiddos. So I'm talking like 12, 13, 14 years old, and they're experienced D&D players, and they actually run their own D&D camps. So they have anywhere between 4 to 6 kiddos. And typically for each one of those, because my overhead is so low on it, we find ways to create like fake scholarships in the community. If we have a parent come in that say, hey, there's one of my kids' friends really wants to play D&D, but his parents just don't have enough money. We get a hold of them like, hey, we just found out that you just won a scholarship. You get to do a free D&D camp. So that's kind of what we do. My husband and I were also foster parents. So we oftentimes find kiddos through DHS to give out some free D&D camps as well. So when we say that we're part of the community, we really try to find out like some of the areas that need just a little bit of extra, find some of those kiddos that just need a place to feel safe.
And I saw too that on your website, actually may have been on your Facebook page, for people coming in to play, you also have playtesting as well. Is that just for new games, or is that for any other type of game that you may already have in the store?
We have a board game rental library that's free in store, and that's something that we always try to pull out of, like, if somebody's interested in a game, we're going to pull out and give them a quick demo. This is something new that we're kind of started. We've had a couple of requests that people have a new game and they really want to play test it, or they really want to get other people's input. So we're willing to try anything a couple of times. And if that is what helps other gamers out, or potential people who are making games, to help them out, then we're more than happy to welcome them into the space and give them a table so they can kind of promote their game.
Very cool. What are some of the challenges you find in the gaming industry as a whole and running a brick and mortar business these days?
Oh my goodness. Some of the challenges still, which is crazy because it's been 7 years. Challenges for me are that we don't live in a super large town. We don't live in a small town either, but people still don't know that I'm here. And so that's a big challenge to, you know, people see Geeks and Games, and oftentimes they go, you know, you're a video game store, which, you know, that's fine. But a lot of people, I still get people coming in on a daily basis that, like, oh, wow, I didn't even know you were here. And so, like, how do I reach those people? So I've tried lots of different ways. I've failed at a lot of different ways. I've succeeded at some ways. But still, I mean, and short of getting a billboard or doing, like, door knocking, I'm not sure how to let people know that we're here. So that for me is just a big challenge, because I'm very involved in the community. I'm very involved with a lot of different organizations and groups within my community. So I do my best to promote the store, but goodness, not everybody knows we're here. I would say one of the other challenges is honestly money. How do you, you know, you want to buy everything. You want to make all your customers happy, but, you know, March is going to be a pretty rough month just because there's so many releases all at once, and you do your best to set money aside. But you know, when you've got an announcement that you've got all these different, you know, a Pokemon release, you've got a My Hero Elite release, you have a Star Wars Unlimited release, you have all of these things, and they're all happening within about 4 weeks of each other. That's a big challenge, is making sure that you have enough money set aside and that you're just budgeting for everything well.
And so how do you make the decision then, when money is a factor, like what product to buy versus what you might have to buy less of or cut entirely? I'm sure a lot of it depends on the demand you're seeing, but I'm curious how you go about making those decisions when you have to factor in money coming in versus money going out.
You know, yeah. So for us, a lot of it, it's really just word of mouth. My players know me. I mean, a lot of them call me mom. But, you know, they're going to let me know, like, hey, we're super excited about this thing coming out. You know, are you going to get some in? And then, you know, maybe one or two people will say that. I'm like, well, probably not. If I'm only going to hear from a couple people, I may push something out on social media. But it's just it's really listening to my customers, listening to what they're saying on social media, listening to what they're saying on, like, you know, in the store, knowing, you know, talking to other people that work in game stores. Really developing a good relationship with my reps from my different distributors. So I know in the very beginning I had a rep when it came to Magic, and really if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be where I am today with Magic, because I'm like, I don't understand. I don't understand what this means. I don't understand what that means. I'm afraid I'm going to miss release. And he's like, no worries, I got you. And so having that kind of relationship has been ideal. Even last night I freaked out because I had forgotten something and emailed my rep, and he's like, oh, no worries. So just, you know, having a good relationship and not being afraid to say, I don't understand this set, or I don't understand these mechanics, or, you know, what have you heard from other game stores? And oftentimes they're pretty honest, and sometimes they're like, you know, we haven't gotten very many orders, and that might be for a reason. So just trying to take into those factors. Someday, I think that the best response that I'm going to have is that, oh, it's because I have the extra time to do the research. I don't have the extra time. I'm a mom. I have two kids and a lot of customers that rely on me. So for right now, I'm not ahead of the game. I'm still merely playing catch up.
I still think, though, from a customer relationship standpoint, you do a fantastic job of making sure you're there for them and, you know, listening to them. One of the things that you said that really stood out to me, and this is something I've always personally appreciated, and it gives that almost that small town feel, is remembering the people's names that come in. Was that a conscious effort that you made from the very get-go that you were going to do that? Is it just a natural thing you do just in everyday life, even if you didn't own a game store?
For me, yes and no. For me, I am terrible with remembering names. I just am. And so trying to make it a point to remember names, at least in the military, there was names on people's uniforms and it made it so much easier. And I've never worked in customer service. My background is military, law enforcement, and healthcare. So I've never had this type of job before where I'm having customers, ringing them up and whatnot. So for me, I just honestly started treating people like they would be my kids and having a personal relationship with, you know, everybody. And, you know, people would come in, I would remember their names. And honestly, it's a little funny now, but that's actually how we ended up with our daughter. We just adopted our daughter through foster care. I got a call from DHS one day saying, "Hey, we've got a 14-year-old kid who needs a foster parent. Can we bring them over?" And I was like, "Who are you and how did you get a hold of me?" And they're like, "Oh yeah. Do you want to be a foster parent?" And really, this is odd that you should call me. And I said, "Perhaps." And they're like, "Well, he's one of your customers." And I said, "Oh," and I said, "Well, what's his name?" And they told me his name. And I was like, "Oh, of course, I know who he is." And so I said, "Let me talk to my husband, see what we can do, get some beds." And then they called me back and I said, "Okay, we can do it." And they were like, "Oh, by the way, he has a little sister. Can you take her too?" And so I said, "Okay." And then our daughter is 7 and she was adopted a year and a half ago. And again, it's not something that I'm like, I'm going to remember everybody's names because I'm terrible at it, but I'm going to remember people. I'm going to remember, "Hey, didn't you just get back from vacation?" Just because people like to feel important. People like to feel remembered. And in our community where there's so much hate and ugliness, that if I can make somebody smile because I remember that they went on vacation or that they got a new puppy or what have you, that I would want people to do that for me. So I, of course, want to do the same for them.
Well, you're certainly making a positive impact on people. I mean, just from the stories you've told and the fact that people recognize, you know who you are and think that much of you, that they want to be adopted. You know, I think that's wonderful. And I'd be remiss if I didn't circle back to what you were referring to earlier with the marketing. And you had mentioned that some things had worked and some things had didn't. Could you talk about some of those?
Yeah. Oh man, some pure failures for sure. Well, one I'm very grateful for, and I'm going to say that I learned from other people's mistakes. I didn't make my own. Is Yelp is not a place to do business with. So I was thankfully able to read other game stores and their experiences with them. So I never fell down that rabbit hole. But so some of the things that have not worked was like people coming and saying, "Hey, if you advertise in my business, we'll, you know, do this, this, and this." I never got anything from that. Oftentimes newspaper, the kids just don't read newspapers anymore. So that's not going to do me any bit of good. And so, it was more along those types of where I'm going to try this or try that. Those really didn't give me a whole lot of business. For me, the most marketing that works better is the Facebook boosts. Those seem to do well. And I think the most important one is just getting as involved with the community as possible. So there's lots of different Facebook groups that you can join that you can submit, like every 2 weeks, you can say something about your business. But because I'm also involved with like our Chamber of Commerce, those are great ways to be involved and to let people know about your business. And then I started doing some weird things because it's half advertising, half helpful to the community. So we do like a couple of fun events every year. We do one called at Christmas time called Naughty or Nice. And so this spurred from a time in my life where I had my great nephews living with me and we didn't really have a whole lot of money. We needed Christmas pictures, but we couldn't afford it. And when I tried to take pictures on my phone, the lady said, jumped in front of me and said, no, you can't take pictures. I'm going to call the security on you." So I thought, well, I never think that any child should be deprived of pictures with Santa Claus. So my husband said, well, why don't we do free pictures for with Santa Claus at the store? And I said, well, let's do something better. Let's do something that's more geeky. So we have a community or an organization called the 501st. I'm sure it's everywhere. But they do Star Wars cosplay. And not just any Star Wars cosplay. They are very strict about their uniforms. So we do an event at Christmas time called Naughty or Nice. If your kids feel like they're on the nice list, they can have free pictures with Santa. They're on the naughty list, they can have free pictures with Darth Vader. And so we have Santa and Vader in one spot where you can see either or both. And then I say free pictures. So you'll need to go to my Facebook page to download your picture, which every time people visit my Facebook page, then I can market to them later. I can also market that out towards other people within the community, different Facebook groups and whatnot. And the more people that come to my Facebook, the more times that I can use the algorithms to be able to market towards them. So that's been a hugely successful way to draw people to my store that wouldn't normally come, because everybody knows Darth Vader. Not everybody knows Geeks and Games.
We're going to take a quick break from this podcast to talk about our sponsor, Cardboard Shuffle. Cardboard Shuffle was our 10th podcast interview here at the Match Slip with store owner Mark. Mark has expanded his brand and has produced his own card sleeves called Shuffle Shields. Shuffle Shields come in packs of 100 premium matte card sleeves for standard size trading cards. They contain no PVC and are acid free. I have 17 packs of Shuffle Shields card sleeves to give away to listeners of the podcast and followers of the Match Slip on social media. Requests for a free pack of card sleeves shipped for free to you will be processed on a first-come, first-served basis. To receive your free pack of Shuffle Shields, you'll need to send a screenshot that you're following Cardboard Shuffle on Facebook to frank@thematchlip.com. Good luck, and back to the episode. And are some of the other things you've done to get your name out there in the community? I saw you do meetups. I saw that linked off on your website. I was curious if that was another avenue you've taken, because it seems like there's a number of things on your meetup page.
So we try to duplicate all of our events that what we do in the store for like our Facebook events section. We try to duplicate that with meetup. And at one point we were like, do we really get any traffic from meetup? And so we started asking people, hey, how'd you hear about us? How'd you hear about us? And a lot of it was through meetup, surprisingly. So we've continued to keep meetup just because that is an avenue for some people to go through. For us, we mainly started using it because it was easy to reserve a free way to reserve spaces for people wanting to play D&D. So you could say, you know, you could do signups online. And so that's kind of why we originally started. It hasn't been like the hugest of advertisers, but it's another avenue. And it's easy to be able to put the information on. The best part of it is that when I make something up in Meetup, I can put that I want to add it to my Google Calendar, which goes straight to my website. So kind of killing two birds with one stone on that one, and less things for me to do.
Definitely. Always good to have that convenience. I know some other stores I've spoken with to get the name out there regarding their store has been to attend conventions, whether that be local or traveling to them. Have you explored any of those types of opportunities before?
You know, some of the conventions, not necessarily like the geekier side of conventions, just because staff availability and what product do we have to offer that nobody else is going to be able to offer or at a competitive level. So we really haven't done any of those types of conventions. We focused more on, in the beginning, we did like a lot of the different fairs and community events that were like the non-geeky things. So we had for a while an agreement with our local Saturday market that we would provide the kids entertainment. So this is back in the day when Wizards of the Coast gave you those free starter decks. So kids could come by, we'd teach them, my customers, I'd give them a free t-shirt, and some of my kids, my customers, would come and help teach other children how to play Magic. And then those kids would get to keep those decks. And so that's more along lines of what we do. We don't go into any of the bigger conventions just because we're a pretty small footprint. We are one of the larger stores in the Portland area, but for us, it's just the availability of staff. I'm a mom, I've got two kids. I don't know what you've heard on the news, but Portland isn't always the nicest place to be right now. It's not always the safest. So we try to stick closer to home.
That's understandable. With the amount of product that some of these games have, like for example, Wizards of the Coast releases a lot of product. I know they just lowered their SKUs in terms of their booster boxes. And I don't really know, since Magic is really the only game I've ever been involved in outside of when I was younger, I dabbled in Yu-Gi-Oh! For a while. I'm curious if managing the product load, and you can talk about whether it's Wizards of the Coast or any other company that makes these various, you know, games, is there a challenge that you face as a store with trying to digest all of that and how to, you know, make decisions? Because it could seem like, you know, you always hear the player base talk about product overload at times, and I'm sure the same must go on for being a store owner too.
Absolutely. There's, you know, sometimes you think you make the right choice and order enough of one thing, and then you use that same choice to or decision to make a to make an educated decision about a different product. And so, you know, the reasons why I'm sitting on, well, right now it's the Martyrs at Karlov Manor play boosters. Good Lord, I have a lot of them. Thankfully, I didn't go as heavy in as I thought it was thought I should, because, you know, it's a new product. Maybe I just want a little bit less, but that is very frustrating. It's frustrating when, because I'm not a longtime Magic player, so I don't have that knowledge that most people do when it comes to, you know, this is a great set because it ties into this from 19, you know, 98 and whatever. I just don't have that knowledge, nor do I have the capacity to have that knowledge at this point. So really, it's just kind of a guessing game. I have definitely, because of how much they release, I've really had to fiddle with my numbers and just realize that I'm not going to make everybody happy. I'm not going to always have enough product in, and that's okay. I mean, that means it sells, right? So it's hard because, yeah, there's just so much, and then they switch it up so often. So
what do you do in those scenarios where you have a lot of project, like the Karlov Manor one that you were just alluding to? How do you wind up getting that out of inventory and not just have like money sitting there? Is sometimes you just have to just let it sit there, or is there anything you could do that helps push it along? I know probably the worst scenario is when you have to sell for a loss. So I'm sure this has happened, you know, prior to just this set. I've heard of other scenarios where this occurs. So I was curious how you deal with that when there is a lot of unknown involved regarding, you know, how well something will actually sell.
Well, I think one of the things for me is I'm probably going to sit on it for a while. There are certain times where I do some sales, so that's a great way to have the product reduced a little bit. I don't do credit sometimes. I don't do running credit at my distributors. So if I don't have the money to pay for it, I'm not going to buy it. So yes, I would like to make up for that money that I just spent, but if I don't have the, let's say, $5,000 to buy the product that I need, then I need to scale it down to something that I can afford. Just because I want something doesn't mean I'm going to get it. If I can afford it, that's when I'm going to get it. And so for me, yes, I am sitting on, and most people are like, oh my gosh, you're only sitting on that much. Like I've got like, you know, seven cases. I don't really have that much. I have more than I usually do. And so, or more than I would have at the end of a pre-release for sure. So it will sell slowly, but not, I mean, faster would be nice. I may put it on sale, but I'm not going to sell it necessarily for a loss. So it's just something that have to be budgeted in. And it's a lesson learned sometimes that having people really want that product and knowing that it's limited, sometimes it'll sell itself. So I'm like, hey, I'm getting in 12 boxes. The first 12 people are the ones that are going to get it. That can drive sales too, instead of having them think, oh, well, you're always going to have some, so I'll just get it later. It drives them to that pre-release time or that pre-order time to really get their numbers in to get the stuff that they want.
Are pre-releases the most, like, I guess you would say, the biggest profit generator? Would that be a fair statement to make? Because I've heard that those are really good, not only for bringing in new players to the store, but I hear it's, you know, a pretty good, from a game store standpoint, a good moneymaker for that weekend.
You know, we do well on pre-releases when it comes to both Magic as well as Pokemon or Universes and whatnot. But really the sales, I mean, they've already bought most of their stuff. They've already bought their pre-release. What they're honestly going to be spending their money on are those accessories. They're going to be wanting new sleeves. They're going to be wanting, we do sell beer and wine in our store. Not during Pokemon, obviously, but we do serve beer and wine during like our magic releases. And so, you know, having a couple drinks there, we have snacks and sodas, but yeah, I mean, we do well, but it's not by far our biggest day. You know, sales are typically a little bit higher on those pre-releases, but yeah, I mean, they've already spent, at least those people that want to make sure that they get a spot have already pre-purchased their product.
Is the beer and wine sales, is that like a separate portion of the store, like a cafe almost? And is that like a nice profit generator?
No, it's part of the store. We have a, behind our counter where our employees are, there's a beer cooler, a beer fridge, okay, that has, you know, see-through doors that they can purchase beverages. And I mean, it does well. It's definitely not, it's just to enhance their gaming experience. Typically people don't have more than two beers at a time anyway. So we're pretty careful about, you know, making sure that nobody's getting crazy. And for the most part, our customers just want a couple beers to enjoy their game. No, we've never actually had to kick anybody out because they've been intoxicated. We've never had anybody intoxicated unless they've come in from someplace else. So for us, it's just to enhance the gaming experience. It's not really to make a huge profit off of.
And what would you say is one challenge currently that you're facing and one success or something that's going well right now at this point in time?
Well, for me, one challenge is because of our economy, our sales are down. And so what's helpful is that we've ran the numbers. We're seeing that sales are down. What we are not seeing is that we have lost customers. So we're still seeing the same amount of customers coming into the store. But whereas perhaps they were spending $50 a customer, now they're spending like $35 a customer. So that's really, I mean, if you're going to choose between groceries or a board game, obviously you're going to choose groceries. Well, some people choose a board game. But so, you know, the economy is just the biggest challenge. For us, we saw a huge increase in sales over, you know, overinflated sales, I think. That it wasn't a true judgment of what was going on in our economy. But during the pandemic, our sales were like huge. People had lots of money to spend. And now I think, you know, maybe they're paying their credit cards off. I don't know. But you know, groceries are more expensive. All my kids' stuff is more expensive. So I get it. My grocery bill went from $400 to $900 a month. So I get it. So that's a challenge, is how do you still make things affordable? And so for us, the way that you make things affordable, even though this is a challenge for us, is that the challenge is we are seeing a drop in sales. The success for us is that we are seeing more families benefiting from the economy. So benefiting in the way as I would with my children. We're seeing more families that are playing games. We're seeing more families that are doing things together, and that that to me is a success, because that's what I want to see. I want to see parents being able to come into the store, grab a game, sit down with their children and reconnect, and not have to, you know, they can just turn their brains off for a few minutes to the outside world. And to me, that's a success. That's a success when I see father and son, mother and son, mother and daughter, whatever it is, when I see them coming in and they're playing Pokemon together, that's my success. And I get to look back, and I literally do. I sit there at one of the tables and I just look out over the sea of children on Saturdays, and there's literally not one more spot that I could squeeze another person into. And that's when I think that's the success. I see kids running to my store, but they're happy. They're having fun. They are some kiddos that aren't able to, like, that mainstream. They can't fit into one type of environment, but they thrive in mine. And so I see that's my success. I see the kids, and that makes me happy because the parents are happy.
That's great to hear. You know, I normally ask game store owners, you know, what's something that they consider unique about their store. From my perspective, everything that you've shared with me thus far really seems to be this family aspect. But I don't want to, you know, speak for you, so I'd rather hear from you. For me, that's my unique takeaway, because I haven't heard the emphasis on family in, you know, a lot of the stores I've gotten to talk to in terms of what type of clientele that it's attracting. But I like that this unique element is a part of your store. And I'm curious if you feel the same way, that that's a unique aspect of your store, if there's something else that we haven't talked about that you feel falls into that category.
No, I think that's absolutely what it is. I've visited other stores. I've in the community, when my husband and I, if we go out of town or if we go on vacation with our children, we always try to stop at stores that are near us. We can always find great ideas. We love talking to other people about different things that they do. But for us, it's that when somebody comes into my store, it's like you're coming into my living room. So if I need to go quickly, like clear off a table or, you know, pull the curtain across the back room because, oh my gosh, I got a whole bunch of, you know, things that are looking trashy back there. It literally is. This is my living room. You're coming into it. And so I'm going to treat you just like my mama would treat people. And she would always welcome people into her home. And so I don't want anybody to feel that stigma like, oh, if I go into there, you know, they might judge me. No, I don't care where you're at, where you're from. When you come in here, we're all just going to game. And that needs to be our connection. So maybe we have different politics. Maybe we have different, you know, whatever it is, differences of some kind. But as long as we share the love of gaming between us, then really we've already broken one barrier and there's more barriers that we can break. So for me, it's just, yeah, it's about the family. It's about the connection. It's about bringing groups of people together that wouldn't necessarily hang out together. And they get to come together and find enjoyment and find acceptance among everybody.
Do you think that your ability to cultivate this family environment stems from, like how you mentioned when we first started the episode, having grown up on a farm, not a lot to do where you were living? You think a lot of that helps play into what you've been able to harness from your childhood and growing up to now?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up, you know, I was loved. I had a great home. I didn't know we were so poor until I got to be older. I didn't realize that when we had rice with milk and cinnamon and sugar in the morning was because we didn't have enough food. And so my mom hid the fact that we didn't have a whole lot. But what I did feel was love. What I did feel was at any time I had, you know, 100 acres that I could roam within my area if I wanted to. And so just that freedom, the love that I got growing up and not really realizing things were as bad as they were. And because I didn't have much growing up, I joke because, you know, kids these days, they don't even know what government cheese tastes like. And so if my mom could make a meal out of something using government cheese, then we can make something out of what we have. So knowing that she was kind and wonderful and caring and literally fed everybody, we actually literally do the same too. So sometimes we have big potlucks where we invite people. My customers come over to my house for Christmas dinner. I mean, so that to me is, it's not just a business. I'm the boss. You're the employees. I'm the boss. You're the customers. It's, kids come in. We've had some of our kids live with us that come into the store, and I say kids, they're, you know, in their teens, but yeah, it's just because of how I grew up. I didn't grow up poor, but I grew up rich with family and friends.
That's wonderful. I mean, and I love just seeing how you've parlayed what you grew up with and the love that you were given that you grew up with, and you've translated that into the store, and just, you know, you've really given people a place where, you know, that it's a fun place to go for them. And I think that that is always a telltale sign of a successful game store, especially somebody like yourself who's able to use those experiences of not having as much and then giving even more than what you may have had, you know, growing up at that time. And so what I wonder now, when it comes to running the store on a day-to-day basis, how do you and your husband split up the responsibilities for it?
You know, he tries to track like all the Games Workshop, all of the miniatures games. So Games Workshop, Flames of War, Team Yankee, Song of Ice and Fire. What else do we do? Some Star Wars Legion. And then I try to do everything else. So God love him. I do a lot of all of the back end stuff. So I work with another employee and we do like all of our advertising. We create all of our ads in store. and then we schedule things. Really, I mean, it's we try to find ways to like take things off of one another's plates, but for the most part, I just don't have any more brain room for learning about 40K or Sigmar, but I can talk a lot about stuff that I don't know apparently. And so we just work together on that. We try to do the finances together and share a lot of different things. But for the most part, the managing the employees, doing all of our payroll, doing, you know, everybody's schedules, making sure that people have breaks and whatnot is more the management side is my responsibility. And his is coordinating all of the miniatures.
This episode of The Match Slip is sponsored by Crash City Con, Roanoke, Virginia's premier gaming and fan convention. It's tabletop gaming at its best, in addition to role-playing games, board games, there are vendors, and so much more. Play with some of the top game masters in the area, enjoy a casual game in their open gaming area, or learn to play games you always wanted to play. Attend Crash City Con August 23rd through the 25th of 2024 at the Berglund Center Special Events Center. You could check out more information at crashcitycon.com.
And how would you describe the layout of the store in terms of somebody walking into the store? How can you paint that picture to describe what it looks like?
Yes. So we have some very nice big open windows. And when somebody walks in, it almost feels like a library. So you walk in and you're greeted with games on to the left and to the right. And then when you look forward, you see Pokemon and other games. And so we, you walk in and, you know, we joke and everybody knows it. Nobody wants to talk about it, so I don't mind saying it. But sometimes you get some customers that like to hang out in your store, and maybe they just don't have the same personal hygiene standards as you. And what I like about this store is that when you walk in, all of the things that you need, like the board games and the cards and the accessories, are really towards the front where the counter is. And then when you kind of take a left, you see all of the gaming tables. You see things for like the big war game tables for 40K. And then you see the like kitchen type tables for Dungeons and Dragons, Magic, and whatnot. And so you're kind of protected. So we also have deodorant in our bathroom and spray on deodorant. And so, you know, sometimes I have to remind a customer or two that we like them to go use that. So to me, when you walk in, if there's somebody that is a little bit warmer than the rest, that perhaps they are, there's space between that, and gives us time to address that situation, so it doesn't offend somebody when they first walk in. So what the best part about walking into my store is for somebody that perhaps has never been there before. Maybe they're familiar with gaming, maybe they're not, but they walk in, they're like, oh wow, this is so overwhelming. And so I, of course, we greet them. Oh, it's your first time. Please let me take you on a little tour. So we walk them around the store. And then when we turn left and they see the rest of the gaming area, they're like, oh, I didn't know it was so big. And so they get so excited that there's all these tables. And then I walk them right past the tables and then show them the used or the board game library section, and that this is here just for you so that you can come in and grab a table and bring a game with you. And so that's just kind of how our store is set up. And it's almost an awe factor when they turn left and they see the rest of the store that they may not have realized was quite so large.
My final question for you is, what are some of your future aspirations? That it doesn't have to be immediate. It could be something into the future for the store, but anything that you aspire to see for it as we move forward.
You know, we would love to be able to open another store, but I would love to have more people to help me with that. So that's just not something that I can do right now with my kids being the age that they are. We have, you know, in the process, opened up another business besides Geeks and Games. So that does take quite a bit of our time. I love our location, but man, wouldn't it be nice to have a little bit more square footage and an office that actually gets Wi-Fi. So for us, you know, we'd like to continue to maintain where we are. If we get the opportunity to open up another store, that would be great as well, because I feel that the way that we interact with our community is something that we would love to be able to share with another community.
That's fantastic. And I hope those things do come to fruition for you when the time is right and when it's, you know, beneficial for you guys. I love what you're doing with the store. And before we sign off here, I just wanted to have people be able to know where they can go to learn more about the store, anything that you would care to share.
Sure. We have a website. It is OC, standing for Oregon City, ocgeeksandgames.com. We also are on Facebook, OC Geeks and Games as well. We do have a Facebook group that is 700 plus of my customers, OC Geeks and Gamers. And then, of course, there's lots of, I think we're on Discord, we are on Discord as well. But Facebook is the best way to get all of those updated pictures, images, events that we've done, events that we're going to do. We're going to be coming up in a couple months, we're going to be doing another community event that is probably like my biggest marketing push with Easter. So those are a great way. And we love to help other people take our ideas and make them their own. So we don't ever feel like, oh, hey, you're stealing my idea. Hey, if it works for you, even better. So if anybody has questions or they say, how did you get this event to fire? Or how did you do the annual Easter egg hunt and bring this many people to your store? We would love to be able to help others out because we want them to be just as successful as our store is.
LaDonna, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to talk with you. I really appreciate you coming on the show today, and I wish nothing but the best for you and your husband and the store.
Thank you so much for having me, Frank. I was very excited to get your email, and I'm so glad that we got a chance to talk with each other.
Absolutely. Me as well. And I look forward to seeing you again in the future. Hopefully I'll stop by the store and do like a video tour of it. I would love to come check it out.
Absolutely. That would be a lot of fun.
And for everybody else listening, I appreciate you taking the time to listen to the episode today. If you are in the Oregon City, Oregon area, or you're visiting Oregon, I highly recommend going to check out the store. For anybody else listening as well, if you'd like to check out my reviews of the stores that I visit in person, you could visit us at thematchlip.com/newsletter, and you could get those for you to read there. With that being said, I hope you all have a great day, and we will talk to you on the next episode. Take care.